Welcome to All Learning Reimagined, the podcast that defines convention and redefines the purpose and practice of education. Here we venture beyond institutional boundaries. Whether you're a parent, educator, or curious mind devoted to lifelong growth, this is your space to challenge assumptions and co-create a more humane and intuitive approach to education. Let's reimagine what education can be.
G'day and welcome to All Learning Reimagined. I'm your host, Teresa, bringing you a little ray of sunshine. And together, we're reimagining the future of education one inspired story at a time. And I have an amazing guest for us today, very privileged. Her name is Carolyn Cowan, and she's an embodied psychotherapist, the author of Shame, The Path Out of Hell, and a Kundalini global yoga teacher and teacher trainer. And for over 30 years, she has worked with trauma where shame underlies how the mind, behavior, and self-regulation are shaped. Welcome, Carolyn.
It's very lovely to be here with you, Teresa. Thank you. Thank you for asking me.
Oh, of course.
And it's great actually to be talking to somebody. Go on. It's great to talk to somebody that understands education and teaching and children, things they go through.
Oh, I agree. And I really feel that the topic of shame is a fascinating one and so vitally important because it's everywhere in many different layers, and many teachers, parents, educators may not even realize what it is that's underlying behavior that they're seeing with children and adults, of course. So really keen to learn your perspectives and share your insights so that people can walk away with that little nugget and hopefully a couple of strategies or something that they can do. And then they can tap into your incredible book as well, which is fantastic. So first question for you today would be, what first drew you to focus on shame in your work as a psychotherapist and a yoga teacher?
What first drew me to focus on shame was actually personal, because in my own experience of life, I am at this point in September, I am 34 and a half years sober from drugs, alcohol and gambling. And I got sober when I was 31, but I started using drugs and alcohol when I was 11. And as I got sober, I understood that I was using behaviors to forget. And then, of course, I got sober and I remembered. And then what was really interesting was going through different psychotherapists, and nobody was addressing the root cause. I got sober and I went into 12-step recovery that basically told me I had a disease and that I was a sick person. And that never sat very well with me, because I'm kind of looking at this and going, hang on a minute, I don't think I've got a disease. I think that what happened to me really affected my ability to bear uncomfortable emotion. It really meant that I felt like I was a bad person. Terrible things happened. I felt like I was a bad person. And about, I don't know now, maybe 15, 20 years ago, I was on a training, just being a psychotherapist, doing a training, and nobody had ever mentioned shame properly. And we did a circle in this training. Somebody mentioned the word shame, and I literally had an epiphany of, oh, okay, this is all shame. And actually, at the point where I understood that, my own recovery changed enormously, my own journey and learning. And then that led me to retrain as a psychotherapist. And it led me down the path of actually exploring. There's a huge amount of information being uncovered now about how the brain works, how the body works, what shame does. And so to understand shame, it's very liberating. It's hard because it's dark and sticky and secret. But when you get what you're looking at, it's the key to liberation, which is why I wrote a book about it.
Oh, I love that. And I really do love the fact that you've shone a light on something that people like to just sweep under the carpet or pretend is not there. And yet when you do, you know, light that candle, everything is exposed, and then you need to deal with it so that you can move forward and heal. I just really love and admire what you have done and how many people you've helped over the years. I mean, in your 30 plus years working with trauma, you must have really seen shame growing up across different people and cultures. Is
Yeah.
it different between the different cultures that you have noticed?
That's a really interesting question. I actually yes, so I've worked with clients for pretty much 30 years, but I also run 3-day shame workshops twice a year. So I've done for 12 years, I've run 3-day shame workshops where people fly in from all over the world to actually focus on and deal with their shame. And that's a really hellishly extraordinary experience of literally, as you say, shining a light on it. And dealing with it in a way that's quite surreal and startling for people. And I've run that workshop in lots of different countries, including Russia, many years ago. Running shame in Russia, that was really, really interesting because different cultures and different countries treat shame differently. So in somewhere like Eastern Bloc or ex-Eastern Bloc countries, shame is used as a controller. You have to be shamed to be sublimated, to become less than, to agree to the system, because shame is about, I think there's a good segue here, if I can segue, which is,
Absolutely.
yes, I mean, shame is dealt with differently in different cultures, and in places like Amsterdam, Germany, Sweden, Denmark, it's a different thing again. But when you actually choose to do the work to release yourself from shame, it's really important to recognize, first of all, that shame likes to be really secret. So shame is made up of all the things you don't tell people. Shame is an internal, emotional, psychological wound to the self. So shame is that you believe within your deepest, for some people, it's subconscious, not consciously aware, but you believe you're wrong, you're bad, you're broken, you're toxic, you're contaminated, you're unlovable, you're unwanted, you're not deserving. Lots of different words, different people attached to different words. But shame is the sense that somewhere you're broken because the things that happened somehow broke you. And so you do not deserve. And so then what happens is if you have shame, you will shame because it's an emotion that wants to be passed on. Also, while you still hold on to shame, you're available to be shamed. Because the moment you have that sense that you're broken, even though you don't think anybody knows, everybody knows when someone's uncomfortable and when someone feels like they're really not the full ticket. Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely, yes.
When you talk about working with children, you can see it in children. And you can see it in the anger, in the violence, but you can also see it in the scared, soothing, fawning. You can see it in so many ways it shows itself. And of course, yeah, if you have shame, you're available to be shamed.
Oh, I agree. And it doesn't always have to be behavior that's avoidance and pushing away. Sometimes from my observation, it might be as child that turns into like that straight A student that has to be perfectionist and does not want to be wrong because they are trying to hide and hold everything together so much. And that underlying emotion, and they might not even be aware of it consciously, is shame. It touches upon so many different aspects in education, and I'm really have been pondering since I discovered your work, how many teachers and educators out there are even aware of what to do to handle this, because it's intensely physical and fits in with the nervous system as well. So it's it there's just so many different layers. I'm really enjoying what you're sharing, Carolyn.
And I think you've got such a good awareness of it because of having worked with it for so long. Because one of the issues, of course, is that if you have shame, you will shame. And of course, the education system, I haven't been educated in Australia. I was educated in a Catholic boarding school in England, and I wasn't a Catholic. And it doesn't matter about the stories. I won't go into the stories right now, but they're a story. I can do stories. But I remember my daughter coming back from a state school, in England, coming back one day and going, I really wish the teachers wouldn't shout at me. I said, what do you mean, teach? shout at you. I thought, why are they? She's got to shout at everybody. And of course, they use, a lot of the time, shame is used to control children. Children are shamed for being stupid. Children are shamed for fidgeting. And it's a system that is, it's inherent in the system. Actually, one of the things that I do fundamentally believe, which is contentious, and I don't have a problem with being contentious, but I do believe that all disorders are rooted in shame. And that is a huge statement. But if you think about anxiety disorder, of course, anxiety is shame. You don't trust yourself, you don't trust the other, you don't trust the universe. OCD, coming back to actually your moment with perfection, OCD is trying to be perfect in some way, lining up your pens, making sure everything's safe, or perfection in, as you said, grades or beauty or honing the self, Botox, plastic surgery, they're all forms of shame, hiding shame. All the neurodivergent disorders. I mean, obviously, that's an enormous conversation, but when you think about if a child is not being heard and they're not being seen, ADHD, getting attention by being shouted at. What a great way to get attention, because you're being so annoying that nobody can do anything but shout at you, but at least you're getting some attention. Autism, which goes the other way, high functioning autism, where the intimacy is so terrifying because the internal relationship to the self is so complex that the only thing that that person can do is disappear. Do I make sense? I notice even though we're on video, you're nodding.
So I'm nodding completely because I can relate to every single thing that you're talking about. And I taught in London for a couple of years. And
Did
so
you?
I, yes, and I actually went to school, a Catholic high school, and I'm not Catholic. So I can relate to what you're talking about at the same time and having to work out, well, I'm different. And the school that I worked in London had very few Caucasian people in there. So I it was an absolute minority, and I could see and observe the difference in the way that we teach in Australia to the UK. It was very, very different. The culture was very different. So I can understand the flavour of what you're talking about. And you're right, in classrooms across the world, every single day, children are being shamed. And I'm not sure if it's consciously being done by some teachers. It could be just their frustration or they're scared themselves to try and control the
System,
adults.
isn't it? That's
It's
set. And actually, if you'd look into the go into the more extremes, and let's imagine that we're actually looking at private school. You've got boys being educated at really places like Eton and Harrow to become world leaders, and you've got women going to Roedean or Benenden, and they're being trained in a way, trained, educated to be the wives of those leaders. You've got this fantastic Ouroboros, this continuous snake of shame that's swirling through, actually shutting people down, forcing them to behave in certain ways, humiliating them, creating an emotional landscape that means, you'll fulfill your destiny, but at a huge cost.
And the cycle then continues because, as you said, those people who have been shamed will shame. And so where does it stop until we actually change the system? And people say, oh, you can't change the system. Well, we are the system. Collectively, what we walk past and accept, we're saying that that's okay. So it's some at some stage people need to stop and say, no, this is not okay, or change what we're doing. And I'm observing the last 10, 20 years, particularly the last 10 years, people in droves are leaving education systems and seeking going back to the old way of homeschooling or, different types of education where the classes are smaller or you have more tutors and you're tapping into nature. And there seems to be a really large swing. And I feel like this emotion has got an is an undercurrent and is certainly prevalent in all of these spaces and conversations.
Yes, and that is a very good segue, actually, back into something that you brought in. And again, the conversation can go into so many different places, but you mentioned about how physical shame is.
Yes.
So then, I've written this book, Shame: The Path Out of Hell, and I wrote another book before, actually about how to reduce shame in pregnancy, how to reduce stress in pregnancy, in essence. But the biggest question I get asked is, why isn't this stuff taught in schools? Now, this stuff is. When you are Triggered, anxious, angry, hurt, upset, feel unheard, don't feel seen, feel abandoned. In any of those states, whether you're 5 years old or 65 years old, your body will, because your body will physically tune in to the fact that you feel separate, you feel abandoned. Therefore, you have to go into protect, attack, and defend. It's a primal animalistic way of behaving. No matter how many shiny phones we have and how up to date our software operating system is and how many AIs have written our essays, we're actually animals.
Yes.
So a classroom with 5, 6, 10, 20 children of all ages in all those different, they trigger each other. They're all watching all kinds of stuff. There's an enormous amount of emotion and hormones that gets shared. The moment one person is scared, everybody's scared. The moment somebody cries, everyone around them will cry. The moment the teacher is shouting, everybody's either wanting to wind them up or they're terrified. And so you get this passing on, this communicating of stress. And stress triggers, for some people, shame, shutdown, reactivity. But the stress system is a mighty beast. And actually, if it was taught in schools that you begin class by stretching or breathing or resetting, you would actually have an entirely different teacher and group of kids having an experience. And the moment somebody kicks off, you stretch, you breathe, and you contain it. And if you listen to my voice, and the speed that I'm teaching at or speaking at, it's really calming. But if I'm speaking and I'm stressed and I'm anxious and I'm having to shut everybody, and nobody can listen, and everybody's trying, and nobody, and it's so simple. Why isn't this taught in schools? If you teach kids to stretch and breathe, you teach them to manage their emotions. And then the bigger picture would be that actually they would learn that for the whole of their life. I feel overwhelmed. Hang on a minute. I don't like how I feel. Let me stretch. I don't know if listeners or if you can notice how I'm using my voice. And I'm using my voice and it's actually changing the energy of what we're talking about. Can you feel that?
I can feel it, absolutely. I know
Because I'm
exactly what you're talking about. Yep.
at a pace where the stress system is stood down, and I'm at a pace where serotonin and dopamine are released by my voice, and I'm safe enough to listen to. And that's a really interesting thing. And why are we continuing this story of being continuously freaked out? I mean, actually, I do know why, and it's very sad because all of this stress and anxiety and this hate and this propagating of offended, oppressed, and horrified, it gives data and it keeps people glued to their phones. It has a deep. And I'm not really a conspiracy theorist, but I was addressing the point that we can always segue away from because it's such a huge topic, but the point about the actual physical viscerality of shame, that if you stretch and breathe and slow yourself down, you land into the present, and then your brain is not in the pain of the past or the fear of the future. And in the present, it can be safe enough to be yourself and to be okay.
I really, really love that. And you're definitely speaking my language because I know as an educator, if I walk into a room, that energy and my emotions are contagious. And so having that peaceful sense of room, sometimes it might be, playing a piece of music or making sure you've got natural light, not the blue lights that make children hyperactive. And the energy in that, the way you greet your whole body language, and the pressure that you could or could not put on children with whatever the task happens to be, teenagers or whatever age group they happen to be, is a huge key in being able to set them up to be ready to learn so that they're not full of cortisol and fight or flight, where their frontal lobes are shutting down and compromised, and they're not going to have any deep learning if they're in that
Exactly.
space where they're constantly scanning for threat state. It's really the environment is very important. And if anything, our state of being emotionally as well, but our state of being is everything if we really want deep learning from our children. So I absolutely respect everything you're saying.
Is that? And then you've just used the word I was about to use, which is actually it's also about respecting children. Because there is a part in the book, and I don't know which page it's on, but it's a question: is your gaze kind?
Oh, I love that.
Is your gaze kind when you look upon a child? Is your gaze kind when you look upon and actually to have respect for the children that you're teaching, to give them the best possible opportunity to become a whole person. I mean, obviously, I'm a psychotherapist, that interests me. But if you can teach children to be calm and kind, that's a really beautiful thing. To if you can teach children from a place of calm and kind, you gift them the ability to understand that it's possible. If they leave the class and they immediately go on TikTok, if they leave the class and they immediately go home and they're being shouted at or everybody's on their phones, at least if they come to school and they're heard and they're seen and someone's teaching them stretch and breathe, and then we'll just have the most fabulous lesson.
Absolutely.
Mean, you know, I just think, why isn't it fabulous? Why isn't it fun? Why is learning hell? Why doesn't it actually be made? Why isn't it made into something where let's get into the present moment? Let's have an amazing time. But I say this from a place of going back to something you said earlier, which is I put my children into Steiner school from the age of 3. So they showed up to school and they learned to cook and to make bread and to card wool and to weave and to sew and to, you know. And although they both left when they were 8, they weren't twins, they went through separately, but that education has affected their whole life, and they still now in their 20s refer to and use it as a base for how they approach what they want to do is actually to be present, to be aware of the actual power that they hold in changing how the universe evolves rather than hating and following in the mad, crazy destruction that we're all being led into by
Oh,
the
yeah.
nose.
And distraction, distraction, distraction. And Steiner, I love the way they teach through stories and making that connection. Steiner and Montessori and the forest schools, the kin schools, there's just so many of them popping up all over the place. They have been for a long time now, but there's a huge shift towards people searching for these options. And I'm really loving that because it's, in my opinion, heart-based. It's not mind-based only. I mean, obviously, you need intellect that you're there to learn, but it's launching from that care and compassion and connection to earth, and connection to each other, and then also connection to purpose and sense of purpose, which, of course, that whole I am not enough. When you know that you've got these skill sets, it's a really great place to start. I agree, Carolyn.
It's also, you know, it's about starting from a place of being intrigued, fascinated, and interested rather than scared, self-protecting, attack, protect, defend. It's a completely different approach. So maybe you and I, we should use this podcast as a way of getting everybody who has anything to do with children to go, okay, there has to be, let's set up a series of stretches that and breaths that kids do before they start. After breaks, just all you have to do is stretch for 3 minutes. Everybody can spare.
Absolutely. I
And it could
agree.
change so much. I mean, we you know, shame is a really interesting wounding to the self, and then it creates all. There are different ways. I mean, I've named disorders as all being rooted in shame. We have safety mechanisms which are rooted in shame, but we also have what are called creative adjustments. This, in a way, they're similar, but disorders are named behaviors in a. In an arcana, you know, disorders go from say, anxiety all the way to even bipolar. And all the things, whether it's dyspraxia, dyslexia, dyscalculus, very much included in education, you know, they're very much about not having had the care and attention and actually staying in a child state, needing somebody to literally sit beside them and really gently, calm down, you've got this. It's okay. Slow down. You can move gently without breaking something. It's that awareness of don't keep repeating the damage. Actually, Give everybody a break. Give yourself a break. Have a stretch. One of my sentences, one of my favorite sentences is step away, beautiful people or beautiful person. Give yourself and everyone around you a break, which means have a stretch. Have a breath. It's okay. Right now is perfect.
Oh, I love that. I love that. I'm going to write that down. I think that's beautiful. And so, I mean, having a breath and having a stretch, it sounds so simple. And this is the thing. People seem to overcomplicate that you have to do this and you have to do this program and you need to do this and that. And but it's the simple things as having a stretch. Everybody can stretch.
I know. And you know something, you're so right. But you, every single person who feels the need has to find within them the right to deserve, because shame deserve. And so it's counterintuitive to stretch, because the brain is so lost in the fear of danger, the fear of being attacked, the fear of being hurt, the fear of being ashamed, the fear of not being perfect, that it's almost counterintuitive to say, actually, right here, right now, I'm okay, I can stretch. So you've
So
got to deserve.
how do you help children or another adult or someone that's going through this, what can we do to create that supportive environment for that to happen?
If you're talking about the people who are teachers, they're leaders, actually. They're just not leaders out in the politics. They're the ones who are starting the process. If they can show kids, hey, come on, let's calm this down. Okay, if it was me and I walked into a class, I generally would choose the troublemaker. And I'd say, right, you're going to be my assistant. You're going to teach everyone how to do this breath, because you're the leader. I'm not the leader. You're the leader. So you teach everyone how to do this, And then you go, okay, let's do it. We're all laughing, but notice now. Can you notice? How do you feel? Name it. And you start to show the switch. And then actually, I've had experiences where people have said, or kids have said, we haven't stretched. Can we stretch, miss? Because I need to stretch. Can we all stretch, miss? You didn't make a stretch, miss.
Oh, I
Yeah,
love
let's go.
that.
Yeah. And that makes goosebumps, doesn't it?
Yes, it does.
It's
It
not
does,
to
because they're
say,
embodying it, aren't they?
yeah, and then actually, yes, great. Aren't you brilliant for saying that? Well done. I love you for saying that. Let's all stretch. Then you teach the deserving, it's okay to deserve.
Oh, I love that as well. This conversation is massive because there's so many layers in everything that you're saying. And I know that people who are listening right now, wherever they are and whatever their circumstances, will certainly resonate and take away something with this. So if people wanted to hear more or learn more and get more details from your book, where can they go to find out this information?
Well, I have a website and I run a lot of courses, including the Shame Workshop, but the Shame Workshop's only in person. So my website is carolyncowan.com. And then the book is available in all territories, as Amazon calls it, on Amazon. So I spent 3 days reading the Audible. So there's Audible, there's Kindle, and all over the world you can get the paperback. Only in the UK you get a hardback as well, which is a mighty beautiful thing. I'm proud of the book, and so it's available on Amazon because I self-published, because no publisher wanted me to talk about shame in the way that I do. So I made the risk and published myself.
Oh gosh, isn't that amazing? And I love that. I love your drive and you get up go and your passion. You're so
Got
passionate about this.
to stop shame. I mean, shame is being used to control, manipulate, and hurt. It's time to stop it. And I love that you're doing this too. And it's really nice to have been asked to speak with you. So thank you.
Yeah, of course, of course. I really love connecting with people like you too, Carolyn. So thanks for coming on today. Unfortunately, we've run out of time, but I'd really love to keep exploring this topic.
I'd love it too. I'd love it. So yes, let's.
Yes, that's I can hear it now. I can imagine the emails that are going to come in now. People saying, "Oh, more, 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 please," because it's just such an important topic. And I really feel like universities that are training teachers from the get-go should have this on their curriculum.
I agree, exactly that. I really agree. Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. So, okay, well, we'll be in contact then. And for everybody else that's listening, thanks for joining us on All Learning Reimagined today. Until next week, explore, experience, express, but we want you to go out and live learning. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you. Thank you for joining us on All Learning Reimagined, where passion illuminates the path forward. Remember this: the future of learning doesn't arrive from above, it begins within. You are the spark, the shift, the living answer to education's silent call for transformation. So stay curious, stay awake. Let inspiration be your compass, because how we learn today is not just personal, it is profoundly generative. It shapes the very architecture of tomorrow's world. We are not separate from the system, we are its evolution. Until next time, trust the wisdom of your own unfolding, and let your life be the lessons that light the way for others.